Good morning. We're here this morning with Joe Giannotti from the Penn Literacy Network. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Ella.
Can you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your experience?
Presently, I'm the Associate Director of the Penn Literacy Network and have been for 6 years. Previous to that, I had been an English teacher for 30 years, starting off in Philadelphia school districts and then two districts in southern New Jersey, the last 22 years in West Deptford. I had been an adjunct with the University of Penn, teaching at the Literacy Network for 11 of my last 30 years of teaching, and then slid into this role. Came together with the POSCE initiative, came from a number of years ago working with the PDE and Governor's Institutes and some professional development that we were doing around the state, and Vicki Phillips at the time, who was the Director of Education, Secretary of Education, was the first impetus behind this, along with Annenberg, in putting together some kind of school reform model. What we came up with the leadership, the coaching, and the instructional practice was, I think, an important factor in where we are today.
That's great. So you've really seen a lot of changes, both within your own school district as well as statewide.
My own school in New Jersey had adopted these practices without the coaching piece, quite honestly. But the collaboration was through mostly department chairs, lead teachers, and without the term coaching at the time, which was really back in, our change started there in about 1990. But it impacted student achievement greatly in our district. We were an underachieving district, and shouldn't have been. We were a district that had a better reputation than our test scores would indicate. But in the course of about 4 to 6 years, where we had about 70% of our teachers K-12 trained in the PLN model, we began to really see significant changes. One of the most obvious at first was our writing scores, which went from lower half, sometimes lower third, to top 10% in the state, and one time ninth in the state in our writing scores in that six-year period. Our reading scores went from 70th percentile of our kids passing all the way up to 99% of our kids passing. It was a significant increase both in practice and student achievement and in collaboration within the schools. It was a wonderful experience that much of which we're trying to recreate in schools that we work with and also within this POSCE project.
How did they sustain the model? So once you left, I mean, you were a key player, I would imagine, in that transformation. So once you left, how did the district sustain the kinds of practices that they had been implementing while you were there?
Leadership was still there, even after I had left, and we had already structures in place. Structures, for example, like new teacher academies that would meet in the summer, where new teachers would work with mentor teachers for 2 weeks, learning the different models and strategies and paradigms that we were using, learning how to lesson plan, and would leave after those 2 weeks with their lesson plans for the first month of school. Very practical piece, not just the record keeping, not just the management classroom management pieces, but truly instructional pedagogy that was important for us. Plus, we were looking to hire people who had pre-service in schools that had very similar programs to the kinds of thought process that we were going through with PLN. They knew a little bit about Collins, they knew a little bit about reading for adolescents, they knew a little bit about engagement, and that became an important part for our hiring processes of targeting certain schools and hiring from those schools. The other piece was simply a lot of curriculum writing. Some of it within departments, some of it between departments, where we were looking to make connections and to build resources of best practices and best unit plans so that teachers could continue to use this rather than having to reinvent the wheel every year. We used much of our professional development pieces to continue to do literature studies and continue to do the kinds of intensive work around student work, looking at how students were writing, trying to fine-tune our own instruction based on what students were doing, and using data from tests to be able to fine-tune again where we needed to put most of our energies in, and being consistent with that model. Having said all of that, the school is now in decline because leadership changed significantly over the course of probably, I'd say, the last 10 years now, and that no longer is the practice. They still say they're a PLN school, they still adopt it, but little professional development is going on. New teacher academies are no longer going on, and so we have seen a significant slip in test scores, student achievement, and teacher morale in the district. So it's an interesting thing. If you do not have the leadership on top of it, it's very easy to begin to see how it erodes. first with the new teachers coming in and then teachers slipping back in terms of practice and again, not having that focus on that consistent model of instruction and data-driven decision-making that we had been doing for the better part of 15, 16 years.
And that's exactly what we're trying to do with PASCI. And that,
sustainability.
That's in it. So you see it up close and personal.
Absolutely. Seeing the good and the bad.
Right, right. So it's clear then that professional learning opportunities tied to standards, tied to practices, tied to data are things that will help sustain any kind of model, but certainly one that's steeped in an instructional framework.
Consistent and ongoing. And with the leadership that I think we provide with this program, not just from administrators, but from teacher leaders, coaches, that's just crucial in being able to, I think, inspire and motivate the kind of best practice in classrooms that we want to see. It's just easy to slip back. It's just easy to not be as intentional as we are trying to have teachers be in planning lessons and thinking through why they're teaching, what they're teaching, and in looking for not just to throw a do now or a word splash into a lesson, but why? Where does it connect? What kinds of things are we looking for students to do with these kinds of strategies, which are wonderful in standalone by themselves, but which mean so much more when they are linked to content and linked to the kind of consistent practice that we want kids to do. We want them active learners. We want them reading actively, note-making actively, making sense of things, summarizing, extending thinking. We want them to be doing things, not just in an English class or a math class, but we want them 7-8 periods a day in a high school finding a consistent pattern of learning that really becomes habit. And that's the most important thing in a high school. Kids need to do it enough that it becomes habit.
Almost an automatic response. But they'll get it if their teachers get it. And so we're providing a way of teachers getting it, so to speak.
Absolutely. It struck me, I think, about third year I was using PLN practice when my kids were walking into the room, sitting down, opening the notebook, and looking for the do now. And when I was not providing them time to parent share, they were wondering, why not? When I would begin a lecture, they were looking for my template of what were the keys so that they could follow a guided lecture and note make effectively. And were angry at me at the end of the period when I did not give them time to go back over their notes and summarize and turn to a partner and pick out the most important things for the day. That wasn't just for me. That's the whole key. It was they were doing it with another teacher in chemistry and another teacher in Spanish class and another teacher in history. And so they were looking for certain things and had embraced them as this is what I need to learn. And without, you know, without sounding like a cheerleader, it makes a huge difference in the kinds of learning and the kinds of retention that you see in kids.
Well, it's almost as if kids are, you're teaching them how to relearn.
Yes.
In a more effective way.
Very much.
So talk for a minute, keeping in mind what you just said about almost having a routine, a planned way to learn, a planned way to teach, and kids recognized when they didn't have it. Well, now jump a little bit towards the barometer of measure that we must abide by, and that's the No Child Left Behind legislation, where making AYP as determined by your PSSA scores is actually our barometer. How do kids, how do teachers, or I should say, how do we help teachers help kids understand that teachers are not always there to give them that guided piece of learning? How do you make that transition with teachers?
It's hard because teachers first have to understand that it's not about doing practice tests. It's about doing, on a daily basis, class by class, the kinds of practices and learning strategies that kids are going to use and internalize that will come out on that test. If children are not used to responding on open-ended questions, if children are not used to reading between the lines, being forced to make inferences they wouldn't make on their own, being given active processes of doing it, of highlighting text, of making margin notes, even while they might not be doing that on a test, it begins a process of, I read to make sense. I don't read to finish a passage, I read to make sense of a passage. And that shows up on state tests, that shows up on standardized test scores. Nothing made me angrier than my principal in the old days, calling a meeting of 11th grade teachers to talk about the 11th grade test. Horses left the barn. It's a matter of what have we done in 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade to get them ready for the 11th grade test. And those consistent practices, when they're embraced, and it's not prescriptive, it's not about follow this plan, it's about understand what's important for kids to do. You know, every teacher knows their content, we don't question that, but what kinds of practices, what kinds of experiences do we want kids to be doing regularly that are going to most impact what they'll do on test day? And that becomes crucially important. I certainly understood that with AP tests, but I'm not sure that all teachers, when it's not just their discipline and their piece, understand that in the more broad term of how does a chemistry teacher impact a literacy score? How does a English teacher impact a math score? That there are these cross connections between content, and giving up that isolation and giving up that ownership of all I have to worry about is these 43 minutes or these 80 minutes is not easy. In the POSCE program, I think what we do to really ease that process is the leadership and the coaching. To me, that's just absolutely crucial to be able to sit down one-on-one and to help a teacher understand where that role can be, how they both can improve that student as a science student in your classroom, but how that will eventually impact that student more broadly as a learner.
Good point. It's really talking about teaching, that teaching is not in a vacuum. And teachers are the only practitioners who tend to practice by themselves. And so you're actually breaking down those walls and helping that, not only an interdisciplinary approach to learning, but also for the collaboration, the collegial sharing.
Absolutely. Even within a department, if you have a 10th grade English teacher teaching one way and 11th grade English teacher teaching a completely different way, you're not going to have as much impact on those students as you would if there was some shared practice from year to year that were building habits and building good learning processes in these kids. And you see that. I mean, you look at the looping studies in elementary and you begin to understand how important consistency is, and yet that somehow gets lost as we go into the upper grades. I love the fact that we have a model and a framework to teach to. I love the fact that it's not overly prescriptive. I love the fact that we are in front of it with administrators and coaches understanding it to be able to really help and facilitate that back in the districts.
So what you just described is really after 2 years, how you think the PLN framework has impacted teachers and schools.
I think it's important. I think we see teachers paying, the first thing I hear in regional courses and back from coaches is more attention to engagement. Less concern of content, I know I'll get to it, but more concern with how that active learning in classrooms. How am I going to help that kid understand that chapter in a science text? How am I going to help them be able to handle that primary source document in a history class? How does what that kid doing in an English class impact those two other areas? And being able to look at, well, what does it do now provide? How do we get kids working? How do we get kids making connections? How do we get them from that passivity of you read it, teacher, and you tell me what it means, and I'll remember it for the test, to I have to figure it out, and I have to make sense of it for myself. That truly impacts test scores, because teacher's not there to tell student what it means on the day of the PSSA or any other standardized test. That becomes a practice that's crucial. The more we begin to give the students the responsibility and the support of being able to do for themselves, and that becomes what we're looking to do, that consistency of practice is important. It's not about doing everything that PLN says is important. It's about picking out the parts that are going to truly impact your discipline, your style of teaching, and building consistency within departments, between departments, and within a school.
It almost sounds like while you're asking kids to take ownership of their own learning, we're asking teachers to take ownership of their own teaching. So it's helping teachers becoming a little bit more metacognitive.
I think being intentional and reflective is important. And I'm not sure that in 180 days of 5 and 6 classes a day, we've always thought that possible. I know I'm teaching Macbeth this week. I know Macbeth. I'll be fine. That's different than planning out lessons that are going to be not concentrating on my knowledge, but on theirs. And that kind of intention is important. Reflecting on the practice, reflecting on how could I have done that to make it more engaging for students. I don't know how many times in my 20 years before PLN, I would walk out of a class feeling good about what I did, but realizing after I thought about it, I didn't do much today. And that would, but at the time, I really did not have strategies to fine-tune it. I was teaching as I had been taught, which is what so many teachers do. This is great. Collaborating and facilitating discussions in districts with mentors and coaches, administrators, teacher to teacher, is so important, being able to problem solve. And that's what teachers do constantly throughout a day, is problem solve, make decisions. But we get too bogged down, I think, sometimes in classroom management and see classroom management as separate from classroom practice. And to me, instructional practice, having a well-planned lesson, keeping kids busy meaningfully, not busy, is a way of handling that classroom management problem and making it less overwhelming. It keeps kids on task. It keeps kids focused. It moves time much more quickly. And it enables learning in place of coverage. Not to give it up. I don't always believe that less is more. But I do believe that if they're not learning it, then it really doesn't matter what we're doing in front of the classroom.
Talk for a minute about the advantages. You're alluding to teaching teachers how to teach and making it more engaging for kids, and that's the most important thing. Kids have to learn what you're teaching. So what are the advantages? PLN does the centralized course and then the regional course, so it's an ongoing professional learning environment. Talk for a minute about that.
We love the centralized course as a way of putting the teacher leaders and administrators a little out front, understanding the things that, and making decisions about what they want to be seeing in their classrooms, in their teacher conferences and the like. We want a shared vision. We don't want administrators who are thinking differently than what teachers are thinking. It's so crucial that everyone understands that when I'm looking at a classroom, these are the things that I'm looking for. Now, this is what we think is a successful model for that. I think the framework provides, if not the answer, provides a part of that discussion, provides the foundation for discussion on what we want to see happening in classrooms. In the regional courses, the direct training of the teachers, of the classroom teachers, certainly is an important factor in being able to give them the time to work it out. Our coursework regionally is very practical. It meets periodically so the teachers have ample time to go back and try things out in the classroom, fine-tune it, see it bomb, and know why, at least begin to reflect upon it. Our journals are not research. It's active research in classrooms with kids. And the piece of the coaches on top of that, working through it after they've had the training the first time, hearing it in regional courses a second time, facilitating conferences with teachers and watching teachers, I think really begins to fulfill the mission of intensive practice, reflective practice, and the ability for teachers to make good decisions. They have a way to look at, well, I know they're not listening, but I don't know what to do about it. I know they're not getting it, but oh, so what? I'm lecturing to kids that are not listening to me. I'm talking to them, they're taking notes from the board, but we're not making connections. I really thought they had it, but everyone bombed the test. You can't teach kids that aren't listening. Kids need to have active means of being able to understand. And we need to look at differentiated instruction differently than 30 different lesson plans. We need to look at different ways in for every kid. And the kind of framework that we provide with those engagement models provides support throughout periods. The centralized and the regional together, I think, provides the best chance for that success to happen in classrooms, in building critical masses of teachers thinking in a similar way, building the kind of problem solving around common language, common beliefs, and a shared vision that is developed within each school. And it's not the same in every school in POSCE. Some of them embrace some parts of the model more than they do others. In some areas, it's, you know, they get the writing and they're still struggling with the reading. Some of them understand the engagement, they're still struggling with the writing. But they are looking to build focuses year by year. You can't change the world in a day, but over the course of the 3 years, what we're hoping to see is certainly much improved instruction on the ground level in the classrooms.
What are some of the best practices? Now, you've mentioned some before, but what would you say are key best practices that you feel are critical to changing practices that will yield a change in student learning?
Very similar to the Pennsylvania framework, literacy framework. The work that we've done based on Wortbotel's work fine-tuned to secondary from Dave Pearson, Nancy Fielding, a lot of the work in the field around active reading for adolescents, of how kids can better access text on their own. And it all of it goes to really kind of a spin on the guided lecture, a guided, I'm sorry, reading approach that's adopted in the early grades. And the idea of being able to both read to kids with kids and then have kids read on their own, it becomes a scaffolding that's important in building active reading models where kids can make sense. Lots of reading read alouds, lots of paired readings, lots of short bursts of independent reading where there's specific things that we're looking for, kids to pull out main ideas, pull out things that stand out for them, lots of marking of text, lots of note making, lots of use of, as Marzano says, the coding of text. So there's a lot of work that we're trying to get kids to be able to do. We find that reading is really the ground floor. That's where we're trying to build the kind of social structures in a classroom so that kids can work with kids, so that we can begin to build more language in classrooms. And all of the research that we see that language is crucial to learning. And whether that's oral language, written language, not just reading, as we sometimes have thought, I think, in the past, becomes important. And you can't build that kind of language without ample opportunities for kids to talk and for kids to write, in addition for kids to read. In the old paradigm of, I'll read it to you, I'll tell you what it means, and then we'll test it, that really is not providing the same opportunities for kids to learn how to do it themselves. They may know the content. If it's a good student who, you know, really cares about what you're saying, they'll remember it and they'll give it back to you in a test. It doesn't necessarily make them a better learner. And that becomes an important part of what we're trying to do. Engagement, as I've mentioned before, another key piece. How do we keep a kid in 43 minutes? Listening. The idea of attention span, which we know has been a problem. The idea of the unmotivated learner, which we know we try to sometimes overcome with our own passion for our subject. But motivation's hard to affect. Engagement is much easier. Giving kids meaningful activities that are going to lead to better understandings become more of the key. And that does mean short bursts of activity, short bursts of talk, short bursts of reading, short bursts of writing, and building toward longer and more meaningful pieces where kids are putting all of these pieces together. But you have to start somewhere. And the beauty of this framework is, whether you're dealing with the AP level or whether you're dealing with your struggling kids, classified mainstream students, whatever it might be, there's a way in for all of these kids. And there's a way for teachers to make it applicable at all levels.
And the PLN facilitators all share, obviously, the same kind of thinking, and that's what they share in their regional courses. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about these key practices and the regional courses are reinforcing it, what's some of the feedback that the PLN facilitators are getting that coaches and teachers are bringing to them to saying, here are some areas of weaknesses that we would like some support, or here are some areas of strength where we've implemented what you've taught us?
First, I'll say that literally to a man and to a woman out in the field, we have all found, including in the courses that I've facilitated, about 6 to 8 a year, so much less resistance than we expected from classroom teachers. And I really attribute that a lot to the centralized training. I think there was good word of mouth that went back to the districts. And the first year through, it surprised me some, because these are not always easy districts, you know, where teachers are kind of ingrained with a philosophy of my kids can't do this, it won't work for me, it won't work for our... that becomes kind of the mantra to explain some of the failures that may have been happening. And I've done that. I mean, well, I can't, this won't work, that won't work. But I think that the centralized training really helped to provide a bubbling of the pot, so that when they came, they were at least listening, and then were finding some early success. They were taking it back and, yeah, I know, do nails do work. Oh, my kids are writing more. Oh, you know what? My kids are marking text, and it's working well. I tried that word splash. It was great. And the more success they have, I think the more opportunities they were finding to be able to expand and to talk with coaches and to find that support that the coaches were able to provide. And I think that in year one, that was the biggest thing we saw was how little resistance there really was. I was expecting more resistance in year two in the regional courses, because the first wave through were the ones that will probably join pretty much anything. I was expecting much more resistance with the second year, where, okay, I got to do it sooner or later, I'll do it. It was easier. There was, and again, I attribute that to the coaches, to the word of mouth from the first-year participants. There was, I want to see this. I want to hear this. Oh, this is what you're talking about with the research around social learning. What we're working on do nows and with my coaches, now I see where the connections may be. They had a level of knowledge and a level of, I guess, inquiry. They were interested in knowing more. And it led to definitely a better quality of reflective journals. It led to a better quality of final projects. And I think it is because they're talking this stuff and back in the schools. Coaches are enabling and really supporting this kind of work. They're seeing it in their colleagues' classrooms. They're talking about it more in their department meetings. This is beginning to pervade culture, and I think that is what all of our facilitators talked a lot about in year two. That's not to say there's not problems. It's not to say that there is not in some schools, but I still can't get kids to do this or to do that, or I need to work more on this, and I'm still trying this, but I don't. But there doesn't seem to be an area. Each school may have their own element of, we need to more work on this or on that. There doesn't seem to be a common ground of, it's about writing or it's about reading. There just seems to be, and I would say that math is probably the most problematic in building around content. And I think it has to do a great deal with not seeing pedagogy as being across the board. They see this as specific to the content that they're teaching. It's not, this will work in Algebra 1, work in calculus. I would tend to disagree, but those connections are not easy, and I can't make them because I'm not the one actually in there teaching that for them. But I think it's much more content specific in the mind of the math teachers that are in the program than in many of the other content areas. That's a problem that we need to focus on and overcome. I would say if there was a level of discomfort from our facilitators and from myself in the second year of this program, that's probably where it is.
Okay. Describe the final projects. You mentioned something about now we know and you're seeing evidence that teachers are talking about it when they go back to their schools. They're supported by the coaches are supported by the mentors are supported by the facilitators. So it's a very codependent, if you will, environment. And then they go to these courses and they're supported even further. And then they have the projects to show evidence of what they've learned. Talk for a minute about those.
And most of the projects that we have found in the regional courses and the year one courses tended to more be units of study, something that they were going to be utilizing, teaching later in the year, teaching in the beginning of the next year, utilizing the strategies, the frameworks to be able to build better instruction in classrooms. What I found much better in terms of the quality in year one to year two was the amount of involvement of coaches in the final projects in year two, which seemed to improve the quality a great deal. A great deal more involvement in colleagues working together. We had many fewer projects in year two than in year one because teachers wanted to work together. In year one, we had many more projects from one teacher. In year two, it was two, three, four teachers joining together, two teachers and a coach co-writing a piece. And I love that because we encourage that kind of collaboration. And we saw an awful lot of cross-content stuff as well. We saw an awful lot of social studies and English working together. I can remember one specific one in Harrisburg that was a math teacher and a literacy coach that worked together on an incredibly wonderful math unit. That I think that they can use for the next 20 years. It was just absolutely wonderful. And it was a significant piece. It was about a walking period long piece of instruction. But the literacy that was infused in it and the learning theory that was involved was just, it was phenomenal. Those kinds of projects, I think, go a lot toward giving teachers a sense of what I can do. When I take the time, when I have the time, when I'm given the support, this is the kind of great instruction that I can plan. And then when they are able to implement it, then it becomes that matter of reflection. And that's where the coaches, again, play such an important role of, it didn't go as well as I thought. Why not? Let's fine-tune it. Or, this is fantastic. Now I want to do another unit just like this unit. And that will, again, become an important part of what we'll be doing in the curriculum back mapping, of course, in year three, because it'll fine-tune the way they look at writing curriculum and the way they look at writing their units. We talk about the backward design when we're talking about the final projects, but not in as much detail as we will with the curriculum back mapping piece. So I think all of this leads to better and better and better curriculum instruction throughout the districts.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for your time and answering. I could ask you 100 questions, Joe, and just listen to you talk, so we better stop here. But this was great. Thank you so much. One piece of advice that you would give teachers and coaches and mentors about the initiative?
Kids can learn, and teachers can always get better. And collaboration, I think, is truly a key. I used to think that small learning communities was an overused term. I no longer do. I think that collaboration is such an important piece. After teaching in isolation for 20 years, of locking the door, of not sharing work with any other teacher in a department, of asking for and being rebuffed so many times with, you know, help from experienced teachers when I was first starting out, I think it's an important piece of what we do, and I think that it will lead to hopefully the kinds of student achievement that we want to see impacted. And Ellen, thank you very much for having me with you today.
Thank you. And this will be posted as a podcast on our website. So thank you, and enjoy the rest of the training.
Thank you.